My sobriety birthday is March 18th of 79. For that, I'm extremely grateful. This guy over here, Roger, is responsible for me being here today. So a lot of you probably don't know Roger. Maybe some of you don't know Roger. Roger is the guy that gets the speakers to do this. Okay? So, Roger, would you stand so they can see you, please?
Yeah, avoid this guy. Hold on.
Now, I've got some real important information for you. Roger, in the meetings that I'm in with him, he always says, make sure that you're here Sunday. This guy's going to be speaking. And he does that with anybody. So anyway, I want to inform you that next Sunday, Roger is going to be speaking.
What?
Yeah, that's going to be good. Thank you.
But I don't know if that's exactly true. But at any rate, I have another disappointment. Since last time I shared with you, it was somewhere between 2 and 3 years ago, I think, up here. And Charlie back here, has kind of lost some of the flair. I used to. I used to could depend on him to wear some of my ex-pimp clothes. What's happened is he's got kind of soft now. He's wearing blues and browns and red. I was used to the yellow, the orange, and the pink and all those other colors. And he's kind of slowed down on wearing those. So anyway, and then the other thing, these rows up here in the first couple used to be filled with ex-pimps and playboys. Now there's just Jim and Roger and a few others here. But it used to be just filled with it. But anyway, kind of hopefully getting some of that out of the way. Basically, in its totality, part of what I'm saying is that I used a lot of people for a long time for my own purposes, okay? But, and usually, myself included, when we speak up here, it appears maybe that we're having one hell of a lot of fun at the expense of other people. That's not the case. This is just part of what happens in Alcoholics Anonymous as we share our experience, strength, and hope of what happened and the way it is now. And so that's part of what I hope to do. The way it was, first of all, I was born in a place called Lubbock, Texas. And my mother took us away from there. I was 7, 8, 9 years old. And we moved to Denver, Colorado. So that's where I was raised, and that's the city that I basically know about, is Denver. And since I last shared with you, I had my father die, my mother die, my uncle died, and a couple other people in the family. And so for the last 2 or 3 years, I've been constantly on the move from San Antonio back to Denver and that kind of thing on a regular basis as the health started to decline big time. So that kept me really, really busy. This debacle started basically about 17, 18 years old. I started doing a little bit of drinking, and then about 18 years old, the wheels just came off. I mean, I went through a lot. I had a brother that was a year older than myself, and he got into a lot of trouble in Denver, and they gave him what's known as a float. In other words, he was to spend a year in the penitentiary or leave the city of Denver for a year. And of course, he left, chose to leave the city for a year. So at any rate, he would sneak back and forth in once in a while. He'd sneak back in. But during that year's time, he got killed. Now, originally, they said that he committed suicide. But I knew that that was not the case. So I kind of played detective and went to Omaha where he was killed. That's where he went when he got the float. And to find out exactly what happened. And the reason is because the insurance company did not pay for suicide. So we were having a lot of trouble getting him buried. So at any rate, I went there and we had an attorney and that kind of thing. And the insurance company just settled and said, yeah, okay, fine. So we got him buried. But I eventually went to Omaha to kind of live. And I found out it's a very easy place to live. And so I just kind of stayed there. I hung out and went to Omaha. And anyway, I ended up staying there almost 30 years. And a lot happened during the course of that particular time. So this brother of mine, when we had this funeral, he came to town from California, where he was living. And when he came to Denver on the airplane, I had never been on one before that. And when he came, he had on the most beautiful burgundy suit you ever seen. And he had on burgundy alligator shoes and beautiful burgundy tie. And he had all his jewelry on his hands. And I looked at my oldest brother and I thought, that's what I want. I knew right then that that's what I want. And so my mother, I was doing a lot of drinking, and so my mom said to him, you take him back to California with you. You know, because I was getting out of control. So I went back to California with my brother, and it was, like people had said, truly the land of milk and honey. I mean, I loved it, okay? And when I got there in his apartment, there was one woman there inside the apartment, and she didn't particularly care whether I was there or not. I mean, by the way she walked around dressed. She didn't particularly care. I mean, that was just a regular routine. And then there was another woman, you know. And I started watching all of this, and he started telling me various kinds of things. And pretty soon, I was doing exactly what he was doing. And I loved it, you know. I mean, I spent money like it was running water. I didn't think I would ever be into it. The way that they just kept giving it to me, you know. I sure as hell, I mean, today sober, I know now I didn't know what I was doing. But I didn't need to know what I was doing. I mean, they did it for me, you know. Now, again, I'm not proud of that behavior today. No, because I've been able to see through the whole thing. But that is what happened. Now, during the course of that time, I had to do a lot of moving around because these women went to jail occasionally. And they wanted to lock them up for months and maybe a year, you know. Well, I can't take care of myself. I mean, we had to leave, so we would leave one city and go to another city and do that on a regular basis. Anyway, I ended up the last time with one lady, and we had to leave San Francisco because they were really getting ready to lock her up. So we ended up, my brother had called me and told me, he said, listen, he was in Canada at the time, and he said, listen, I'm getting ready to go over to Alaska. You should try to get on a plane and go over there. Well, we did. As soon as she got out of jail, we got tickets, and we went to Alaska, to Anchorage. and we started doing the same kinds of things in Anchorage. I mean, I was so dishonest, I couldn't get an apartment with this little toy poodle that we had. And so we had to lie about that. So the lady said, no pets. So anyway, we got the apartment, and once in a while, the dog would bark. Okay? So when the lady would knock on the door to see if we actually had a dog in there, we put the dog in the little towel closet thing and closed the door, and the dog would be quiet, and she would want to know, and said, no, there's no dog here. And she'd leave. And we were okay. We probably did get busted, though. They threw us out of the apartment. But anyway, those are just some of the little small kinds of things that would happen. And pretty soon, like as always, things change. She left, you know. And there I was, you know. And then I had to start trying to figure out a way to take care of myself. So when I'm in these various clubs that I had always hung out in, you know, I had to start learning how to steal. So if you would get drunk, I would steal your wallet or whatever I could get my hands on. And so I did this one time, and I got this guy's credit cards in Anchorage. And I had tried to do a little job once in a while, and I went to Kodiak and worked at a fishery. And at this fishery, I mean, you made good money, real good money. And at this fishery, when we would take a break, everybody drank. I mean, really drank. And so when you went in a bar, you would get six packs. In other words, you get six drinks at once, not one. This guy would buy you six, this one would buy six. And you just have drinks all over the table, but you had to hurry up and drink them up so you could go back to the fishery, which was real close by, and do this fish thing. Well, that lasted about as long as a snowball in hell. Because I wasn't used to the work. I really couldn't perform the work, you know. And so I had to get out of there. So I had this pocket full of money, right? And I had it, and I drank all these drinks. So when I go home to the apartment, there's five or six guys living in the same apartment and together. And so I would fall, when they would fall asleep, I'd steal their money. Okay? Okay, finally I fell asleep. All right? And I usually ask God to help me not to cuss from this podium. But, you know, it's a funny thing about a thief like me. It's fine when I'm stealing from other people. But when I get stolen from, I squeal like a pig. Okay? I mean, I was ranting and raving. You just wouldn't believe, you know. But I can't call the police on myself. I mean, I've done that before, but they wouldn't have understood the whole thing, you know, because I had no business with all the money that I had in the first place. So they stole from me, and there I was. Well, my brother, he helped me get out of there and back into Anchorage and kind of settle down. But anyway, the last lady, she left, and there I was trying to figure out how to take care of myself. Eventually, he said, look, I'm getting ready to go back to the Lower 48. And I went, you know. And we left in the wintertime in a car on the Alcan Highway heading back to Canada. We only hit two snowdrifts, but by the grace of God, we lived. We didn't have to, because he was half snookered and I was fully snookered most of the time, you know. And so we didn't know what we were doing, you know. We just took off and just did things, you know. Finally, I got to back to eventually back to Omaha, Nebraska, through a whole series of events, and that's where I live. And I would stay drunk there most of the time. And things got so complicated, and I got in so much trouble at various times. Anyway, I landed in a treatment center. And I, unfortunately for me, I lived with an old guy that he would get drunk, but he had one quality. I didn't understand it because I didn't pick up the books and read them. But he always read the Reader's Digest, those little yellow books, and he just had stacks of them. And he would drink and read those books, you know. And I often wondered, why is he reading that, you know? But I stayed with him, and eventually I did have to call the police on myself because I got so wired and so messed up, and I had been talking to her again, and she was now in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, in where her parents lived, and I was trying to get her to come back, and I would get drunk, and I would cry, you know, just drunk and cry, and eventually I called the police on myself. The old man was, he was passed out, and they came, and I told them, I said, listen, I committed a robbery. They came, they put me in the car and asked me questions. This is in the dead of wintertime in Omaha, Nebraska. And I had on my big full-length leather coat that I had bought, of course, illegally, you know, with somebody else's credit cards. And most of those clothes were bought with somebody else's credit cards. But at any rate, I was ready for them when they came, and I got in the car, and I told them, look, I haven't robbed anybody or anything. I just need some help. So they took me to the hospital, Emmanuel Hospital, and somewhere along the line, I had did a little job, and they gave us a Blue Cross and Blue Shield insurance card, and I still had that card. I hadn't worked on that job forever. But I still had the car. And they asked me at Emmanuel Hospital for an insurance card. So I gave them the card. And they admitted me. They let me in. Well, by the time they found out that I really had no insurance, they had run all these different tests on me. And this guy came over from the treatment center. I had no idea what a treatment center was. I had no idea what he was talking about. But he was asking me, did I want to go to treatment? And I said, sure. I didn't know what treatment was. And I had nowhere to go. And I said, sure. And so they admitted me into this treatment center. And when they finally got me in this one office after I'd been there a few days, the lady informed me that, listen, your Blue Cross and Blue Shield card is no good. Well, I knew it wasn't any good. But by this time, I was there, so they let me stay. I'll just quickly tell you, I stayed in that treatment center. This was the first time that I had 3 meals a day. 4 years. They fed us 3 meals a day, and I was very pleased with everything. And I was starting to come to, so to speak, and I was starting to learn a little bit of stuff. And so at any rate, a lot of people were unhappy in that, you know. And they started passing around this petition that food wasn't good enough, and this wasn't good enough, and that, and they wanted everybody to sign the petition. Again, I was very pleased with everything, but I still signed. And, you know, why? I have no clue. But, you know, just to let you know, 3 meals a day, and then we could go in their freezer and get ice cream bars anytime we want. And during the treatment process, they give you all kinds of candy if you answer the question right.
It's like puppy dogs.
So I completed that process, got out. God took me to a clubhouse, 34th Street Club in Omaha, Nebraska. They took me there. And the 34th Street Club is actually located on 34th Avenue. If you read our books, you'll understand some of that. So they took me there and they said, I think you'll be real happy here. You know, and I was. When I got in there, they were smoking cigarettes, drinking coffee. There was a few good-looking women, you know. I was okay there, you know. But when, and they played cards and dominoes, but when the meeting started, everything ceased. They cut off everything, and you couldn't do anything until after the meeting. So, of course, I went to the meeting, which was the whole purpose in the first place. And they asked me to get a sponsor, somebody that can help you make some sense of those steps. Well, I didn't do that right away. I played with that, you know, and I would go into the club, and I would empty the ashtrays and take cigarette butts that were long enough for me to put in my pocket and save and that kind of thing. I was trying to find a way to survive, you know. I'm an ex-hustler. I'm trying to do whatever I can to make it and survive. Anyway, this little guy came skipping through there like he usually did. His name is Tom, and I finally asked him, I said, hey, Tom, I need to get a sponsor. Will you sponsor me? He said, well, yeah, okay, we'll talk about it after the meeting. And so we did. We talked about it, and he gave me some instructions of what to do and all of that. And I did most of it. Okay? He asked me to do one thing that I just couldn't comprehend too well. He asked me to call him every day. Well, I started out great. I did most of the time. I start out great with everything I did. But it's getting to the finish line that I had so much trouble with, you know. Anyway, I called him every day for a long time, and then, you know, I got a job with the city. I started making a little money. I had my own place, you know. And he had told me some things and called me every day. Well, I did, except a couple of days I didn't call him. And about the third day, I called Tom, and he said, hey, where you been? I said, all right, everything's okay. Everything's fine. I said, well, why didn't you call me? I said, Tom, I didn't have anything to talk to you about. He said, Bob, I didn't want to talk to you. I just wanted you to call me. It was so simple, I couldn't keep it together. I just couldn't call the guy every day. This old guy came to a conference. His name is Tom O'Sullivan. I'm pretty sure Tom is passed away now. He was 80 then. But at any rate, he said something that just kind of stuck in my brain, what was left of it. He said, obedience is greater than sacrifice. Just be obedient to a principle. I couldn't even be obedient just to call the guy every day like he had asked me to do. You know, I was making money, working, everything was fine. I'm sober a while now. And the guy at the job I was working for, I didn't know it, but he was in AA. And he would sit down on this loader on this job, and he would push these boards up to us, and we had to lay them over this garbage. And I'm an ex-pimp. I'm working at the garbage dump. Okay. I mean, I know you laugh. That's God working in his own way. I'm going back to my sponsor, and he's having meetings in his basement, and I'm telling Tom, I'm saying, listen, this guy's, you know, I was really angry. And he'd ask me, Bob, what is the problem? I said, this guy. He said, well, why is the guy doing it? What's his position? I said, I don't know, other than they say he's the supervisor. He said, Bob, that's why he don't work. I didn't know that. I had no clue. So I just stay mad and angry all the time. Anyway, this recovery process was going really well, better than I even knew anything about. I was recovering nicely. Everything was wonderful. I'm going to meetings. I'm doing everything. Tom and I and all the people he sponsored, we're going to coffee and having pie. And I mean, my day was full. My nights were full. And when I got home, I was ready to close my eyes until the next day that I got up and go to work back on the city again the next day. Pretty soon I got a year or something like that, and the guy asked me to help him and scared the living shit out of me and said, could you sponsor me? So I went to Tom and he said, sure, we'll do the same thing that I'm doing with you. And that's how it all started. That's how it all happened. It was nothing magical to it. I just took to this stuff after that like a duck in water. I just took to it, you know. And ever since then, I've been trying to do this deal the best of my ability. I have had, like I said, a lot of things happen in that process. Along the way, in those 30 years that I was in Omaha, the second year, I met a lady and we got married. I don't know why she's still married to me today. Anyway, we have a wonderful relationship. We have a wonderful home. She's got a wonderful family. What's left of mine, everything is good. But there have been struggles along the way. I had Tom right there in Omaha to guide me just all along the way. All I had to do was go to him and say, hey man, hey Tom, look, this is this. And he'd tell me what he thought. He didn't tell me what to do. He just offered suggestions. He said, hey, Bob, if I were you, I'd look at doing this way or whatever like that, you know. And I would do it. Again, contrary to popular belief, sometime I'd get off that track and he said, don't buy a house, don't buy a car, don't do this unless we talk. Well, I went and saw a car that I like and I told the guy, yeah, I want to buy this one. I haven't talked to Tom yet. Anyway, when I did talk to Tom, I said, listen, I'll get the car, but I need this guy to come. And so Tom came with me to the car lot. We got the car. I hadn't paid for the car yet. I hadn't bought the car. Tom got in the car and drove it for me real quick. And he pulled it up against a post, a tree. And he went, rah! And he said, the engine's good. You know? And I said, fine. This was in the dead of summertime in Omaha, and it's hot. And he said, Bob, but you know this car has no air conditioning. I said, no air conditioning? You gotta be kidding. Listen, left to my own devices, I would have bought the car. I had no idea whether to ask the guy if he had air conditioning or not. I'm a 35-year-old, 36-year-old adult. I didn't have a clue, okay? Now, you know, when today, almost 38 years sober, okay? Today, sometime when I look back on some of my own history, you know, I have to think. You know, God in his infinite wisdom, he knew how stupid I was. And he said, look, I'm going to help you out. You're a special case. I think that's exactly what happened. Is that God just took control of my life and just kind of guided me along the way with Tom and the whole nine yards. Fast forward, a little over 17 years ago, we left Omaha, Nebraska for San Antonio, and we had went two or three other nice, warm places to prepare for retirement purposes. I was starting to, I hate to use that term, think again. Tom had told me, forget about that one sign on our wall, think, think, think. He said, that's not for you. And so I did. And I tell people that I work with today, forget about think, think, think. Don't even do that one. So anyway, we're in San Antonio. I prepare to move to San Antonio. My wife has worked in a hospital her whole life. Okay? And we're going to leave. That was really difficult for her. I had no family members in Omaha. All of her family members are in Omaha. Okay? And her mother had passed away on Christmas Day a year before. Okay? And we got through all of that. So we're moving here. And we get to San Antonio. I've made all these preparations. I'm leaving my job in Omaha. The lady that ran the Council on Alcoholism, she saw some kind of special quality, I guess, in me, and she wanted me to work at the council and go take these people to detox and all of this stuff, and I did. Because they closed the one in Omaha, I had to drive them 50 miles to Lincoln to detox. And sometimes I have to feed them wine on the way there just to keep them alive. Seriously. You know? And the guy would wake up drunk and just ask me, sir, can I have another drink? And I'd give him another drink till I could get them to detox so they don't die. So anyway, we get here to San Antonio, and I'm an alcohol drug counselor for years. And I change careers, and I go to sales training in Omaha. And when I get here, I got a job at Dillard's, the big store here on 410. And I didn't even know. I just saw pictures of it online. And a guy told me in a restaurant, he said, oh, you're going to work at the largest mall that we have, you know. And so I did. I went to work there. A guy came in from a treatment center about, I don't know, 7 months I was there. And he ran the treatment center. And he asked me, and I'm working in men's shoes. And he asked me, he said, what did you do before that? I'm having a wonderful time because I'm in air conditioning in the summer, and it's nice in the winter. And I'm dressed, fully dressed every day. And it was nice. And so some of these guys were making big money. And I went to my supervisor and I asked her, I said, listen, I think I want to up my level. And she said, you know, Bob, I wish you wouldn't, because some of these guys are struggling. You know, they up their level and then they don't make the kind of money they need to make to stay at that level. And so I went with her. I said, okay, that's fine. Anyway, when I got ready, this guy came in. He said, why don't you come and see me? And what interested me was, is he was the director of this treatment center, and he was buying a pair of ballets. Now, there ain't many black guys that come into Dillard's and buy a pair of ballets. These are $240-$250 shoes, and some of them are more than that. And he wanted a couple of pairs, brown and black. You know, and there I am. I opened the store that morning, and there he is. And so I asked him, sir, would you like to try on a pair? And he said, sure. And he tried them on, and he wanted brown ones, and he wanted black ones. And then he said, do you have any Bondufels? And I thought, Bondufels? He said, do you have any slippers? And I said, sure. So he bought some slippers, too. And he gave me his card. He said, well, why don't you come out and see me when you're not busy one day? Well, I had a day off, and I asked my neighbor how to get to this place, and I got to it. It's called the Ark. And I got there, and it was almost identical to what I had been doing in Omaha for all those years. And the guy asked me, you know, do you want to work here? And just like that, I just said, sure. You know? And I went and told my supervisor at Dillard's, and she said, oh, Bob, please. So anyway, I ended up leaving there and going to work at the Ark. I wasn't at the Ark 7 to 8 months before I went to a training, and the guy told me, he said, listen, where do you work? And I told him. And he said, you know, I don't know how much money you make there, he said, but I bet you I could get you $10,000 or $15,000 a year more than you're making. And I told him, let's talk. And I ended up, this is how God works in my life. Listen, when I got here, I had no high school diploma. Okay? I went to work on a job with no high school diploma. I went to school at the community college and got my GED. And Tom pushed me into that. And after I got the GED, he says, why don't you go back and take some college courses? And I thought, what the hell? So I started taking these college courses. I just loved it. I mean, I really did. And I hadn't done really paid attention to education before that. Anyway, I went to work at the Ark. Met this guy in the training. So I ended up going down to Carrizo Springs to meet with him and his boss. And I did. Long story short, I met with them. And Mr. Zamora asked me, he says, something that I've never had anybody ask me before in my whole life. I didn't even know what he was talking about. And he said, Mr. Edwards, we would like, they had taken me on to this little raggedy place to run for them. I was going to run this adolescent center for them in Carrizo Springs. So at any rate, he asked me, he said, and the guy had already told me how much he had made. And so he said, Mr. Edwards, how much money do you have to have? What kind of salary would you have to have? Well, hell, I don't know. Nobody's ever asked me anything like that before. I don't know what to tell him. I just know how much I've made everywhere else I work, because they always told me how much I was going to make. You know. But at any rate, they paid me more money than I knew I was worth. I mean, it was a big amount of money. And then I stayed there 4 years, but I had to sign a 2-year contract. Every 2 years, they gave me another $4,000 if I signed another contract. And I told my wife, I said, well, I'm trying to pad this Social Security. She was like, keep going. You know? So I figured out how to live and do that kind of deal too. And so anyway, that was done. But then I leave that job after a while, and I tell Mr. Zamora, I said, look, I gotta go home. I can't keep coming back and forth like this. So I quit that job, and I came back. And I had no job for about 2 weeks. The guy told me, he said, listen, why don't you go to the Center for Healthcare Services? They need some people over there, Bob. I called the guy up. He said, can you come down tomorrow and let's talk? I went down the next day to talk, and he said, can you start tomorrow? I thought, sure. And I started running that program. They put me in a position that look, I had no master's degree, and I hadn't gotten a bachelor's degree. And these people were calling me up on the phone in my office, congratulating me on another position I got that I didn't even know I got. You know, that's how crazy it was, but that was God working in my life because I just didn't have a clue, but I knew how to do treatment. And I knew how to, because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I knew how to talk to these people. I knew how to deal with them. And they knew how to deal with me, you know. Because I didn't hold back. I let them know, you know, that I'm alcoholic and drug addict. And I've been through some of this stuff, you know. And we got along great. Life was wonderful, you know, until it was time for that part to stop, you know. And so today, I'm retired. I ain't looking for no job. I don't want to work no more. I know for a fact that I am absolutely too lazy to work. And I'll tell anybody that, you know. But anyway, I get to work with a few people in this program. I have been through just about all of the things. I don't even have time to tell you about how pissed off I got because I wasn't a DCM. I tried for years to be the DCM, but I always got outvoted. And I left these committees that I was in. I can't even tell you how many times I left out of those pissed off, you know. And a lot of times I'd make a decision and then I'd back away from that decision and make another decision and so on. But at any rate, I love this program. I love what I do in this theater. And I love listening to people go through telling me exactly what I used to tell them, you know. And I tell them exactly the same thing that he told me, you know. Call me. And then when they don't call me, after, I said, why didn't you call me? And they said some of the similar things that I told you. And I said, hey, man, I just asked you to call me. That's all. And they either do or they don't. And they're either here or they're not, you know. But I've learned one thing since I've been here almost 38 years, is that if they're not here today, they'll be here tomorrow. If they live. If they live, you know. And I've watched a lot of people die in the 17 years I've been here in San Antonio in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. I come here and a lot of those same people I've gone to, I used to just love when Fred was here and other people were here. And then I get to come here and listen to Jim. I just love when he says, my then wife. That kind of stuff. You know. But Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life. I would no more do without this as I would a drink of water. Okay? I love this program. And I'll do whatever I can to help anybody. Okay? So, thank you for my life. Okay? Thank you for everything. Bye.